if you fly to any city anywhere, usually in the airport baggage claim or somewhere relatively close to the gate, there's a screen with advertising about what to do while you're there. As if the local chamber thinks you flew in with nothing planned. Make sure to check out this tourist attraction or this theme park. We've got this museum, this football team, and if you don't eat at this restaurant, you're really missing out. If you fly into Dallas, besides being bombarded with advertising about the Dallas Cowboys or Six Flags or this aquarium or whatever, you'll occasionally see one for the sixth floor museum at Dealey Plaza, where President Kennedy was killed. But if we're talking about the years shortly after the assassination, inviting tourists to see where that happened was the last thing on Dallas's mind. I'm Eric Bushman. This is the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas, Texas. After President Kennedy was killed, Dallas Mayor Earl Cabell stepped down. Not out of embarrassment over the assassination, but because he was running for Congress. He won. Congratulations. Following Cabell was Eric Johnson, who served the city from 1964 to 1971. During this time, Johnson, not to be confused with a future Dallas mayor with the same name and different spelling, had to deal with a new nickname for Dallas that was spreading. The City of Hate. Following the lengthy stint Gary Max spent as curator of the Sixth Floor Museum at Dealey Plaza, associate curator Stephen Fagan took over the lead role as curator. His master's thesis turned into a book about the history of Dealey Plaza and the city, Assassination and Commemoration.
In the immediate aftermath of the assassination, certainly Dallas bore a great deal of international blame. It became known as the City of Hate, the City of Vitriolic Tenor, because of past political events in the city which darkened its reputation. So the Depository became, for many in Dallas, a manifestation of evil, compounded by the fact that it was the most visited site in the city since literally the day after the assassination. When the Texas School Book Depository Company moved out in 1970, many thought this is an opportunity to wipe this building off the face of the earth and, in part, erase some memories, some painful memories from the assassination.
Fagan explains that the challenge of accepting Dallas's place in a post-assassination world was something Mayor Johnson had to embrace.
Dallas endured a great deal of international criticism in the aftermath of the assassination, and they went to great lengths. Eric Johnson's Goals for Dallas program went to great lengths to rehabilitate the image of the city, and ultimately emerging from that was this desire to actually recognize that the assassination happened here in Dealey Plaza and provide a place for people to come and learn about it.
After Johnson, Dallas elected Wes Wise mayor. You might recall the role Wise played for law enforcement on the day of President Kennedy's visit. He had taken exclusive pictures the month before when UN Ambassador Adlai Stevenson was assaulted in Dallas, so he was asked to keep an eye on the crowd at the Dallas Trademark to look for any possible trouble for the president. Wise was a sportscaster for a Dallas radio station and eventually turned his attention to city politics. He was elected mayor in 1971.
My predecessor, Eric Johnson, who was politically opposed to me on several different occasions, did a great job with his Goals for Dallas program, and that preceded me. But when I came on after him, rather than try to destroy that program or try to in any way be critical of that program, I tried to further it, and I think we did further it. And it wasn't one of those things where the two different political arms, the so-called Dallas establishment versus the independents, myself, cooperated for the good of the city, and I think it did work.
By expanding on the existing programs, Wise says he tried to include all people of all races and to extend help to those who needed it.
I tried to emphasize relationships with women. I appointed women to chairs of important commissions, which they had never been appointed before. I had a very good relationship with blacks, people of color, and I had very good relationships with Hispanics, which the relationships with these minorities had been somewhat strained. Now, I don't think that my predecessors were ignoring the poor in Dallas. But I think that the poor themselves were not being told what was being done by the so-called Dallas establishment in their behalf. They were not aware of it. So, frankly, a public relations program had to be started to where the relationships between the so-called Dallas kingmakers, if you want to call them that, or the establishment, or whatever you want to call them, had a better relationship with the poor, and I think that helped.
Wise, though, would learn the hard way that when a city's reputation is one thing, and you're trying to turn it around, not everyone is going to notice. Wise tells this story of something that happened to him as mayor in the early 1970s at a meeting of mayors across the country.
In 1973, which would be 10 years following the assassination, I was mayor, and I was at a U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting in Chicago. And at the end of the day, a group of big city mayors were standing around having cocktails. And one of the mayors said, Mayor Wise, how does it feel to be mayor of the city that killed the president? Well, you can imagine that infuriated me. And I was told later that I clenched my fist as if I were going to strike the man that said that. I don't remember. I do remember restraining myself. And the other mayors were getting ready to hold me because they knew that that would not sit well with the national press and if I had attacked him physically. The next day, that mayor who made that remark came to me and said, "Boy, I have really received all kinds of criticism from my fellow mayors for making that remark." And he said, "I'd just like to extend my hand in apology to you and tell you I'm sorry I said what I said." So even 10 years later, that was still being talked about.
When the company Texas School Books moved out of the depository building, there was a movement to tear the building down. Out of embarrassment, sadness, shame, anger, whatever, people wanted it gone. As if the assassination never happened. Luckily, for history, they didn't succeed. Dallas County purchased the building and renovated it for the county's needs. 6th Floor Museum curator Stephen Fagan has researched that extensively.
It is a part of our history. It's a part of one of the most important events in 20th century American history. It was named a National Historic Landmark District in 1993. Without that building, people would come to Dealey Plaza and not see the full story. And that's what the community leaders who decided to preserve the building, particularly the Dallas County leadership, that's what they recognized. Judson Shook, who was the public works director, whose idea it was to have Dallas County buy the building to save it from being torn down, that's exactly the way he approached this. He looked at this as if the building were gone, it would show the world that Dallas has something to hide. And he thought it was better to preserve that history rather than ignore it and bury it.
Over the years, Fagan has recognized a common theme discussed by the local Dallas news media anytime there's a Kennedy assassination anniversary deemed mildly to moderately significant.
The 20th, the 25th, and it's interesting because if you read the news stories coming out, each of these major anniversaries ending in a 5 or a 0, you have the headlines, "Dallas has come to terms with its place in history." You see that theme repeated over and over again at these different important junctures.
The anniversaries. One anniversary, this might have been the 47th or 48th, I'm not sure, I walked around with my newly purchased flip camera in the early 2010s and just talked to people.
I work next door at the Colony Club, next door to Jack Ruby's Carousel Club, and Jack and I were very good friends, and I ran around with this dancer at the time, her name was Jada, and we were supposed to go to a party at the Alabama that night, and I didn't feel like going, so I was going over the last show to tell her I wasn't going to go, and she was sitting in the corner of the runway at the table with Jack and another guy, and she was sitting at the end of the table, and so I went to tell her I wasn't going, and when I got there, Jack stood up, and he pulled out my chair, like he always did, and as I was being seated, he pointed to the man on the other side of him. He said, "By the way, Beverly, this is my friend Lee Oswald. He's with the CIA." Well, at 17, I didn't know what the CIA was. I'm 65, I still don't know what the CIA is.
You come here and you meet the people who were here that day, the witnesses, and you think back. I was a 5-year-old kid watching it on TV back home in New Jersey, and now you're actually meeting these people that as a young child you were watching on TV and hearing their stories of what happened that day.
What's the big deal about being out here on the anniversary besides the obvious that it is the anniversary?
I don't know. I just feel I'm compelled to come out here every year. I don't know why. I'm just drawn here. I feel like I have to be here.
I think the most important thing to talk about is that John Kennedy, for a variety of reasons, was beginning to set this country on a different course, away from war and towards helping the public of this country. And, of course, that did not sit well with the vested violent powers, the hawks in the Pentagon and the mafia and the wealthy Wall Street elite, et cetera, et cetera. So they took him out.
That last person there was Jim Mars, who wrote Crossfire, a book, a portion of which Oliver Stone's movie JFK is based on. The first person was Beverly Oliver, who says Jack Ruby knew Lee Harvey Oswald. If you haven't been to an anniversary on the Grassy Knoll on November 22nd, you should drop by. You'll certainly be entertained. Now let's talk about the big anniversary, the 50th, JFK 50, November 22nd, 2013.
I was aware that probably the most paid attention day in my 4 years was going to be the 50th anniversary of JFK as I just looked at the things that we needed to accomplish.
Mike Rawlings was 9 years old when President Kennedy was killed. He was in school in Leawood, Kansas when students were told. Now, he's the Dallas mayor. At least he was the mayor over the 50th anniversary, and the national spotlight would again shine on Dallas with the assassination in mind.
I knew this was serious when the November after I got elected, so it's, you know, a year and a half or so ago, I got a call from the LA Times, you know, saying, hey, you know, mayor, in 3 years, this is going to happen. Tell us what your plans are. It was like, people are anticipating 3 years out. They know it's pretty serious.
Many of the times I spoke with Mayor Rawlings during his two terms, we talked about city politics and the city council, the challenges facing the city, and so on. But this time, in 2013, it was all JFK. He spoke at length about Dallas immediately following the assassination and Dallas in the 21st century.
It's a big difference. The city of Dallas is different. First of all, I think it's important to say that there's probably less than 5% of our population that actually was alive and living in Dallas back then, if you start to do the numbers, because there's very little percentage that actually were alive back then in the relative sense. We're a young city. So there's a lot been changed. First of all, I think we're a lot more diverse and a lot more cosmopolitan. Dallas was barely 100 years old, okay, when you think about it. And I just read The Empire of the Summer Moon, and, you know, just, I mean, there were, you know, Comanches running around this area in not too many decades before that happened. And in the last 50 years, there's been a remarkable change in population. So the population is different. I think our business situation is different. We're a very global, multinational business center with headquarters of companies like AT&T and Texas Instruments and Fluor and big global companies. We didn't have that back then.
There's another element to the city that has changed in the five decades that led to the 50th anniversary, as former Mayor Rawlings explains.
I think our politics are different. I think Dallas is a very progressive city. We've got a strong LGBT community in Dallas. You'd never even thought about that, 50 years ago. And I think that as things grow, it's getting bigger and faster every step of the way. There is this sense, though, and in reading and studying about Dallas at that time, the same energy that took Dallas post the assassination and reinvented it. Mayor Johnson really established it with the Dallas Plan, built the DFW Airport, and so many other things in this city, is still there. That's what's remarkable, because I think that energy of we've just been kicked in the gut, okay, and we're going to reinvent and push ourselves to the higher level has carried on from the 60s to the 70s and 80s. We've had some other gut kicks too, but every time we seem to come out of it, this recession, we came out of it faster than anybody else. It wasn't as deep. And And that psychic DNA I see today has got its roots in post-assassination Dallas.
The 50th anniversary was a cold, rainy day. For those of us working as reporters, it was an early day, starting before 5 o'clock in the morning to do live hits. I provided some perspective for the morning shows on both WBAP and KLIF. Then the ceremony got underway with historian David McCullough reading passages from some of JFK's speeches. Then Mayor Rawlings gave his speech. And here's how it began.
A new era dawned and another waned a half a century ago when hope and hatred collided right here in Dallas. We watched the nightmarish reality that in our front yard, our president had been taken from us, taken from his family, taken from the world. Our collective hearts were broken. Like so many of us who were too young to fully comprehend, I remember being called into the school gymnasium, hearing the terrible news, and told to go home. Stunned civic leaders at the trademark luncheon awaited a president who would never arrive. Crowds prayed outside Parkland Hospital. Traffic stopped in cities across the country as news spread from car to car. And the world grieved with us. Newspapers reported that flags were lowered to half-staff around the globe. Germans on both sides of the Berlin Wall placed lit candles in their windows. An 8-year-old Nigerian girl recited the entire inaugural address from memory as her father wept, just like the skies today. While the past is never in the past, this was a lifetime ago. Now, today, we the people of Dallas honor the life, legacy, and leadership of the man who called us to think not of our own interest, but of our country's. We give thanks for his life and his service. We offer condolences to his family, especially his daughter Caroline, on this difficult day. We pay tribute to an idealist without illusions who helped build a more just and equal world. We salute a commander-in-chief who stared down a nuclear threat to this country. We praise a writer who profiled true courage and modeled it himself. We applaud a visionary who created a core of young Americans to promote peace around the globe. We stand in awe of a dreamer who challenged us to literally reach for the moon, though he himself would not live to see us achieve that goal.
During the ceremony, the city unveiled a large plaque that comes out of the ground between the sidewalk and the peristyle on top of the eastern edge of the knoll. On the plaque is the final paragraph of what would have been President Kennedy's speech he was to deliver at the Dallas Trademark. It reads, quote, "We in this country, in this generation, are by destiny rather than choice, the watchmen on the walls of world freedom. We ask, therefore, that we may be worthy of our power and responsibility, that we may exercise our strength with wisdom and restraint, and that we may achieve in our time and for all time the ancient vision of peace on earth, goodwill toward men. That must be our goal, and the righteousness of our cause must always underlie our strength." And that's the end of the quote. While researchers have been critical of the city's actions and reactions dealing with the assassination over the years, Robert Groden's opinion is pretty low. During one of our conversations around the 50th anniversary, he opened up about what he has had to deal with since he moved to Texas in the 1990s.
I moved down to the city in 1995 and was warned that the city was going to try to get me. And I thought, well, that's silly. They're not going to care this late in the game. Oh, boy, was I wrong. Starting around 1996 or 97, I started getting ticketed in Dealey Plaza for anything they could come up with. Selling on private property, selling private property, selling on public property. Illegal parking when I was in the middle of the street, motor running, waiting for the light to change to leave the plaza. I'd get pulled over and get ticketed for illegal parking. I mean, just garbage like this. They've sent out Homeland Security with machine guns. I've been arrested twice. The first time they arrested me, I was ready to file a suit against the city for false arrest. And my attorney negotiated with the city that if they would leave me alone, I wouldn't file the suit. They promised that they would. And for about 10 or 11 years, they did keep their word. And then they started up all over again. It threw me in jail a second time after ticketing me a total of 81 times in addition. So when I got out of jail, I simply filed a 1st, 4th, 5th, and 14th Amendment lawsuit against the city for false arrest and suppression of free speech.
Grodin has fought and won several times throughout the years in court, including the Court of Appeals.
And they wanted to get me out of there. They did not want there to be an alternative point of view in Dealey Plaza. So I won this particular incident 3 times, which brings the total amount of times I've had to go to court up to 83.
Eventually, in 2017, Grodin settled with the city, which again said it would leave him alone as long as he doesn't break the law. Now, back when the county bought the former Texas School Book Depository building, there came an idea to put an exhibit on the 6th floor. That exhibit, which was originally only to be temporary, turned into what is now the 6th floor museum at Dealey Plaza. It's been in operation since 1989, opened on President's Day that year, in fact. Curator Stephen Fagan.
Today, I think the museum is a site of history. It's a site of educational discovery and awareness. It provides people who come to this place with the opportunity to see photographs and films and artifacts and really interact with history in a way that it's meaningful. You can't get that experience wandering around the grass of Dealey Plaza. Being in this building touches people in a variety of different ways.
And as for the city itself in the second 50 years following the assassination?
The city has rehabilitated its reputation. I don't think there's very many people who still express anger and resentment towards Dallas because of the assassination. 2/3 of our visitors were born after 1963. I think that this has become a site of history, and I think it's an important part of what Dallas has to offer in terms of its past and its present and its history and culture. The 6th Floor Museum is about us, and it's about this community and how we emerge from the long, dark shadow of history.
While the city will forever be the place where President Kennedy was killed, the people whose stories have been told will always have their place in the assassination fallout. And for many of them, telling their story from their perspective is important because if others shared it, perhaps it would be told differently. These people wrote books, defended their actions, until they could no longer do so. So many are gone, including many of the people you've heard throughout this series. Their final thoughts and reflections as history takes over the official record. I'm Eric Bushman. This is the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas, Texas.